The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com. Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course the DraftKings Network. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. I usually will ask you how your weekend is, but I think I know how your weekend went based on some of your social medias.
It was okay.
I'd like to explain to the folks what happened to you.
I had a nice four aces on Friday. I mean, if you don't think I gave some of it back, like you're crazy. Come on, it's me. That was also I don't know what I was in already. $400 or $500 before I hit that. So yeah.
All right.
Still nice though. Still
okay. Good. Yeah. Net positive.
The hand pay is always a nice feeling.
Well done.
Glad
to have you here, despite your riches. I didn't know if you were going to show up on Monday or not. We will talk a whole bunch of college basketball today. Mike Somich will join us. Somo bombing. All of these conference tournament odds are out now for all the Power 5 conferences and beyond. This is really, truly conference week. The four automatic bids have already been given out. We'll get into all that. We'll update the formula, our penultimate update of the formula this year prior to the tournament. One team fell out of the actual qualifications for the college basketball formula, the tried and true.
So what are we down to, like six now?
Five.
Five.
Five with a bunch just on the outside looking in. Still a lot, five. But
and a bunch right there.
And a bunch right there. We'll see how many end up in this spot next week, but we'll get into that momentarily. First, though, let's talk some NFL from this weekend because there was a bunch, and we don't want to ignore it. Certainly there was some of the lesser moves that may not have gotten on your radar. Jerry Jeudy goes from the Broncos to the Browns. I don't know if you saw Mark Schlereth's, him a former Bronco, of course. He a former Bronco and a Bronco fan, saying good riddance. Doesn't think Jerry Jeudy's very good football player. So the Browns add Jeudy nonetheless in a packed AFC North, of course. Chris Jones extension. There's a bunch of that stuff. But the quarterbacks obviously take the headlines. We're still waiting to hear. Kirk Cousins, by the way, is going to be a big week in free agency. Kirk Cousins reportedly supposed to notify the Vikings of his decision last night. We don't have word on that quite yet. Waiting for that domino to fall. But Baker Mayfield signed an extension, as we sort of thought when Mike Evans did so with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Did that mean that Baker Mayfield would follow suit? And he did. 3-year, $100 million contract, $50 million guaranteed, could be worth up to $115 million, that per NFL Network, NFL Network's Ian Rapoport. So Baker Mayfield stays in Tampa Bay. We'll crescendo on these. Mac Jones traded by the Patriots to the Jaguars for a 6th-round pick. So the Patriots, who tried to do good by Mac Jones, by the way, they asked him, well, what would you like to do? Obviously, they're moving on with Gerard Mayo, and the new administration over there in New England, clearly now drafting a quarterback, if there was any doubt. Mac Jones scuttled to the Jaguars. And before we move on to the Russell Wilson part of this, I just want to sort of say a couple of things. One, Mac Jones perhaps starting the backup quarterback era of his career. Maybe not. He'll be a free agent a year from now. So, you know, if things go differently, maybe he will find a starting job somewhere later in his career. But for right now, the Jaguars, what does Chris Collinsworth say? Most important position in football is quarterback. Second most is backup quarterback. So good on the Jaguars. I think even those who dislike Mac Jones don't hate the idea of him being a backup quarterback on your roster.
Yeah, I think it's a great move for him. I think it's great. It was a great move for the Jags, and for the Patriots, it's whatever. It's time to start over, anyways, right? But you bring him in as a backup. Are we all sold on Trevor Lawrence for sure? And I'm not trying to say there's any Mac Jones over Trevor Lawrence thing, but as you often say, is there some benefit to a guy sitting on the bench and learning for a year when Mac Jones really didn't get that time in New England?
Well, it's also, I asked the question about Trevor Lawrence when he was being drafted. Are we sure he's generational? Before I could even finish the word generational, oh yes, he's absolutely generational. I don't know that we know that. And I just want to just broader NFL sort of history thing on this, because it just, with the draft a little more than a month away, it's the reminder, the PSA again, that all these teams, now for our betting, teams go crazy with quarterbacks. We know that, so we're going to always keep that in mind. But does it really pan out historically? And Kelly, if you're of a certain age, the 1983 NFL draft when six quarterbacks were drafted in the first round is the really the benchmark of great NFL quarterback drafts, because three Hall of Famers came out of that 83 first round. John Elway, Jim Kelly, Dan Marino. Blackledge, O'Brien, and Eason were the other three, by the way, but three Hall of Famers in that class. And so it's sort of the drug that is being chased all these years. And in modern day, 2020, the draft during the pandemic, that's really the modern day equivalent, where we had Burrow and Tua and Herbert and Love, got to throw him in there now, and Jalen Hurts. Those were five quarterbacks drafted in the 2020 draft where you're like, oh, wow. I mean, all five of those guys have a serious place in the league here 3-4 years out. But since then is more the norm, right? So 83 is one thing. 2020 was another thing. Let's just go through these. 2021, since we bring up Trevor Lawrence, right? Trevor Lawrence was number one pick in the draft. Okay. Trevor Lawrence, generational or not, I don't know. Has he really improved through his first years in the league? I think the jury's still out on that. What kind of improvement? You can debate that. But it was Lawrence. It was Zach Wilson. Trey Lance. Remember, the Niners famously trading up to draft. Four picks, three of which were first rounders. Justin Fields. To say the jury's still out on him would be the understatement of the year. And Mac Jones, all in the top 15 of that draft. Mac Jones now going to be Trevor Lawrence's backup. So think about that. I mean, Lawrence at best right now with that group. The next year, 2022, that was the draft where only Kenny Pickett was picked in the first round. Kenny Pickett now, as we're about to get to, Russell Wilson is the de facto starter now, one would say, in Pittsburgh, as he now takes a one-year deal with the Steelers, a very team-friendly deal, still going to cost the Broncos $85 million in terms of the cap hit. But it was Pickett, and here are the other names after that in the draft. Ridder, Willis, Corral, Zappe, Howell. Remember, until you get to Brock Purdy, the last pick in the draft, mystery irrelevant, that draft of quarterbacks is irrelevant.
Yeah, I was a dud.
By the way, have we talked about how the Niners ended up with Brock Purdy in the last pick of the draft? Adam Schefter has a great story about this. True story. 2017, that was the Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson draft. The Niners had the third pick in the draft. They had no interest in either Mahomes, Watson, or any other top-tier quarterback because they thought Kirk Cousins would leave Washington the next year and come to them. So they didn't even research quarterbacks at the top of the draft with any kind of depth. So they end up picking Solomon Thomas III. They're like, we're getting Kirk Cousins. And then Halloween comes around, and the Patriots are like, we need to move from Jimmy Garoppolo. Just give us a second-round pick. So that scuttles the Kirk Cousins thing. The Niners end up with Jimmy G. Remember, at that time, Jimmy G was thought to be just as good, if not better, than Kirk Cousins. The only quarterback they end up drafting, the only one they scouted that year, was mid-round quarterback, was C.J. Beathard. The Niners end up picking him in the third round. They trade up to pick him, by the way. 4 years later, when he leaves to go to Jacksonville, they get a compensatory pick, Brock Purdy, all those years later. Just shows you, like,
amazing
the quarterback nonsense that goes on in these drafts, and how you end up with who you end up with is oftentimes accidental.
I always think about, too, with Purdy being Mr. Irrelevant, too. Like, you know, there was, we haven't really heard this, but you know there was like four or five teams that are like, oh, great, that guy will be like an undrafted free agent. We can bring him in for a workout. I wanted to get a closer look at him. And then he gets drafted, and you're like, oh, no, whatever. No big deal.
By the way, just to put a bow on this, last year, this past draft, Bryce Young, number one pick in the draft. Young, to say the jury's out again, understatement. Stroud, okay, potential superstar, at least after 1 year, we think so. Richardson got hurt, we don't know yet. And then after that, Levis, Hooker, Hayner, Bennett, O'Connell, Toon, DTR, Clifford, Hall. You go down, Duggan. By the way, undrafted quarterbacks, Tyson Bagent, secret agent man, and Tommy DeVito. They got more run than all those other guys. So right now it's Stroud, Richardson, and who knows? So anyway, that's the point of all that. So Mac Jones on his way to Jacksonville. Obviously, he's a backup quarterback, doesn't move any betting lines. Russell Wilson does go to the Steelers. That was the big announcement. He was on social media last night. He did the whole renegade Steelers terrible towels video. Said he's grateful. He is the de facto starter with Kenny Pickett being his backup. That's the only other quarterback on the Steelers roster right now. Mason Rudolph's a free agent. Mitch Trubisky already in Buffalo. Did it move a number? It did not. Steelers remain 10-1, the long shot to win the very crowded AFC North, with obviously Baltimore and Cincinnati at the top and Cleveland in between. But as we discussed last week, from the Steelers' perspective, their attitude is simply, hey, look, we're good. Obviously, we got horrible quarterback play. They wouldn't say this out loud, but this is a truth serum. Russell Wilson will make us a playoff team. Because if you look at Russell Wilson's raw stats, by the way, from his 2 years in Denver, they don't suck.
Not terrible, no.
But anyway, that's the idea. Would it trigger any bet for you? Do you think there is a groundswell of people who are like, wow, Russell Wilson is on the Steelers. We must make this bet.
No. The best I can say is if you were someone like me who was likely for a third straight year targeting a Steelers under win total bet.
Yeah.
I'll probably stay away now, Kill. You know I like Russell Wilson enough. I do have enough belief there that him with Mike Tomlin, they could make some noise in a division that should be very, very tough.
Yes. They're not the shortest of the last. Let's put it this way. They're not the shortest of the longest shots in any division. That distinction holds the Vikings right now in the NFC North, who are like plus 550 as the fourth shot in the NFC North. But 10-1 in what many believe is the toughest division in all of football. The real sort of amusing thing as we're going through this, I'm thinking in my head, our famous Mike Tomlin stat that we always joke about. Could Russell Wilson be the guy to kill Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season streak?
See, no, I feel like he's the perfect quarterback to get you just to 9 wins. The perfect quarterback to get you to 9.
You think Tomlin's like, I need somebody who's guaranteeing me another 9-8 year. We shall see. So those are the moves. Expect a big week of moves. We'll see if the betting needle moves on any of those coming. College basketball formula update next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your favorite, all at the lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find at Total Wine & More. Drink responsibly. Be 21. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Live from Barcanada, the barrage here at the D, Las Vegas. I read the right one, didn't I, Kelly? I sure did. Yes? No? Kelly is dumbfounded over there in the corner. He has no idea.
You did a great job.
Thank you. I don't know if that means I was right, but I did a great job. So we get tweets, by the way, beating the book. Haven't read any tweets today. Let me read some tweets. How about that? This is from Los Vegas 514. Yo, talking as a Commodes fan. We have had nothing for a very long time. Hopefully, Jaden Daniels will change that. Let's go. Yeah, man. From your lips to God, as my mom used to say. Mike Stacks, when the 2024 NFL schedule comes out, I will be excited to see what week Russell Wilson and the Steelers head to Denver to whoop Sean Payton's Broncos. I hope it's week one. Oh my God. I want the comeuppance myself. Ladies and gentlemen, I haven't spoken to him in a while. He was on when I was on vacation, I believe. But it is always my pleasure to have on the show the co-host of The Point and the Fantasy Hockey Show on Sirius XM NHL. It's our buddy Jake Hahn at jhahn4, the number 4 on Twitter. He comes to us through the powers of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Jake?
Doing good, y'all. I'm sorry I missed you on vacation, but I hope you had a well-deserved time off. And I know it can't be too far away from the NHL playoffs now that I'm talking to you, boys. So happy to be on with you today.
Yeah, man. I'm pumped. Before we talk hockey, though, I know you're also a golf guy. Scheffler runs away with the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Pardon me. Does so by 5 strokes on the strength of a 6-under final round. How did you do in this tournament, and what's your overall sort of golf takeaway here from early in the year?
Well, I finally got beat by Scottie Scheffler. I think like a lot of people that bet outright golf, we're sort of waiting for that to happen. Right. And if you looked at his ball striking numbers over the last, even really going back to last year's season, it was incredible. It's as good as as really we've seen in golf in recent memory. And you always just sort of thought, okay, if he ever finds the putter, if he can ever put it together, even for 2 rounds, not even for 4 rounds, if he could find the putter, he's just going to blitz the field and he's going to win by a lot. And I didn't know when that was going to come, but I think we all knew it was coming. So it comes over the weekend. He found the putter. It felt like sometime late on Friday, he rolled in like a 45 footer. And then from there, he really started to find it. I had Will Zalatoris and Hideki Matsuyama. So I had a fighting chance going into Sunday, but hey, when the best golfer in the world shows up and plays around like that, sometimes you just got to tip the cap, guys. And it's on to the Players Championship, which is the spot that Scottie Scheffler blitzed the field last year. So maybe he feels like going back to back.
Has this been, I'll bring Kelly in for this too, has this been a frustrating, has this been a sobering golf period for those of you who are into golf handicapping weekly?
I would say it sure was the beginning of the year. It's been tough fighting through and tough grinding out some dollars here and there. I happened to hit Scotty live, got in him on Friday when he was started to roll in some of those putts and started to look like he was making a move. But we were talking about it even yesterday. At least yesterday's leaderboard, like final leaderboard, looks like what a PGA Tour leaderboard at the end of a big event should look like, at least.
For me too, I had Zalatoris, and on Saturday at one point he had a 5-shot lead, and I thought, okay, at the very least I'm going to get into a good hedge position for Sunday. And I couldn't believe looking at the final leaderboard that at one point Zalatoris had a 5-shot lead with how much Scheffler actually won the tournament by. So for me, I have hit a couple outrights this year. So it's kept me afloat. A big Hideki number a few weeks ago, Nick Taylor at the Waste Management as well. So I've been lucky to hit a couple of big numbers, but it's been a weird season, a lot of long shots. And, like Kelly just said, I think as a golf fan, I think I was more frustrated about yesterday just not being that fun to watch, right? And look, you tip your cap to a great player playing great golf, but I was excited for a tight leaderboard down the stretch, and ultimately we didn't get that. So maybe we get that at the Players this weekend.
Okay, let's go to hockey. Someone's landing on the NHL right now, Jake. So you're talking about, you're beyond, pardon me, you're beyond the quarter pole of the season. We're almost there to the NHL playoffs. Obviously, that starts in April. The grind will finally culminate in the tournament. If someone is like, okay, I want to make I haven't seen any hockey this year. I want to make a long shot play. What team that is not one of the conventional suspects, what team is out there that you think might have value in the futures market right now?
Yeah, this is it's a good question, Gil. And I've come on with you in the past, and we've talked the futures market, and we've sort of watched it take shape over the course of the latter part of the year. And in previous years, especially going back to the last 2 years, we've had a team to beat, right? A team that everybody sort of looks at and says, okay, this is clearly the best team. Can anybody beat this team? 2 years ago, it was the Colorado Avalanche. Ultimately, Colorado won the Stanley Cup, and they were the team to beat, and no one beat them. Last year, it was the Boston Bruins. Boston had a unbelievable historic regular season, and we were asking the question, okay, who can beat this team in the playoffs? Different story last year. Boston loses in the first round, so they didn't have the Colorado-type season, and we actually saw a couple teams from that middle part of the board go on a run, one way deeper down in Florida, and obviously Vegas, who was a team people were certainly in on and betting, but not the favorite going in, and ultimately winning the Stanley Cup last year. So this year is completely different, guys. It's been 10, 11 teams, and the odds makers have not taken a stance at all this year on a top team. Now, it's finally shifted a little bit towards the Florida Panthers at the top. I think the whole hockey community sort of agrees that this is the best team in the NHL right now, but not by a significantly wide margin. And I think you're gonna see a lot of teams in that 10 to 14 to 1 range that you could find some value on. It honestly is a take your pick approach going into the playoffs this year. You could take two teams, maybe one from the East, one from the West, and feel pretty good about their chances, guys. It is completely wide open this year. I do agree with everybody that Florida is probably the team to beat and the top team in the league, in my opinion. I think they're the best team, but they are beatable. I don't look at them as this juggernaut that's just going to roll through everybody. I think they will face some challenges. So ultimately, I'm looking at a team like the Dallas Stars, who I think are built for a long playoff run with how deep they are offensively. Like to see Ottinger play a little bit better between the pipes, but I like what they have. I like what they did at the deadline on the back end, bringing in Chris Tanev. So Dallas is a team for me I've got my eye on. And if you need to go deeper down the board, I do think the LA Kings are at least worth a look here, but I want to see how they play down the stretch. That's just more of a number play than anything else. But Dallas is the team I've got my eye on amidst that pack of teams between 10 and 14 to 1.
Okay. You got to the LA Kings there, but you still want to see how they do down the stretch. I understand. So we're not committing to them. Let me ask it the opposite way. What's a team that others believe in that you don't believe in?
That's another great question. And I think when you're really looking at it, I go back to the Boston Bruins, and I don't know how much belief there is in them this year. And it looks like there's a very strong possibility that they would face the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round. Now, Boston has dominated that matchup. this year. They've won it. They've won every game. So I think a lot of people are going to believe in Boston in that series against the Maple Leafs, assuming that it does happen. They could still finish first in the Atlantic, and it would actually be Florida and Toronto likely in the first round. But if it is Boston, Toronto, I think a lot of people are going to take Boston strictly based off of the regular season record. And obviously there's history there too, that Boston generally dominates that matchup. I'm just not as sold right now on that Boston Bruins roster. I still think there's some holes up front in terms of depth. And I worry sometimes about a team that dominates the regular season matchup and then has to kind of throw that all out the window and start a new playoff series. So I think the Bruins are the team for me that I'm going to be staying away from this year.
All right. And give us just a brief thing so I can be smart to my to the guys who work, you know, in my building, who are huge Vegas Golden Knights fans. What happened to this team this year after just a scorching start to the season?
Yeah, injuries. Honestly, I have to go back to injuries. I mean, they didn't have their starting goaltender, Aiden Hill, for a very long period of time. He is back now. Had a couple of good games, but he has been struggling a little bit. I think they're relying on him a little bit too much. They made some huge moves at the deadline, as Vegas does. They're one of the more aggressive organizations in the National Hockey League, if not the most aggressive. And it's a big reason why they won the Stanley Cup last year. So look, they're still the defending champs. Ultimately, it's not been a great regular season for them, but their playoff spot, even though it kind of looked like it was maybe in jeopardy there last week, just not enough from the Chase Pack teams, I think, to worry about it too much. So ultimately, they should be a part of the dance. And I think they can hit the reset button a little bit. Mark Stone is a huge question mark. He's out for the rest of the regular season. There's a chance he comes back for the playoffs, but a lacerated spleen, that certainly does not sound good for his chances to play come playoff time. And yeah, he's an important part of that lineup. But they get Jack Eichel back. Aiden Hill's going to continue to get acclimated if he can find his form before the playoffs. They make a big splash going out and getting a top defenseman in Noah Hanifin at the deadline. Then they make the Tomas Hertl trade, and it sounds like he's going to play some hockey late in the regular season. So don't sleep on the Vegas Golden Knights going back to back here, guys. I think this is a team that could find their game before the playoffs.
Four games in the NHL tonight. Give me one play if you have any. Anything?
I'm looking at the under in the LA Kings Islanders game. Islanders played last night. It's a tricky back-to-back for them, even though they barely played a team last night in the Anaheim Ducks. But I like the Kings to win a lower scoring game. If you could find a flat six out there, I would roll with that.
Jake, thank you so much. Great talking to you, man.
Yeah, great to be on with you, Gil. Have yourself a nice week, guys.
You too. Jake Hahn, everybody, from SiriusXM. With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your favorite, all at the lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find at Total Wine & More. Drink responsibly. Be 21. College hoops on the other side. Lebatard next on the DK Network. We're coming back at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube, TV, however you're taking us in this morning. We appreciate it. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9, so much more than a producer. You okay over there?
Yeah, man.
You're right.
Doing great.
All right, just a health check.
Just a health check. Okay. I was just looking up Jake's play. Kings Islanders under 6 tonight.
You playing it, or are you just doing it for the
news? Just getting it ready for the picks page, you know.
Brian M. All those years of unbiased political betting leans on the show, Gil, at election time, yet there have only been progressive guests calling in, but no moderate or conservative. I see what you did there. Courtesy of the progressive guest line, everybody. It's Jim Root from Three Man Weave, James Patrick Root. Jimmy, how you doing, man?
I'm great. It's good to be on with you, Gil, here Monday morning, championship week. It's going to be a lot of mayhem coming up. So it's good to maybe get some thoughts out there before it just everything hits the fan.
We're going to get thoughts. First of all, let me just congratulate you on your new role as an industry watchdog, having figured out that that Temple line was something was amiss, perhaps. Well done, sir. You were all over it.
Yeah, thank you. Got lucky to have a VSiN segment that day to talk about it and get something out there and sound smart for once.
Yeah. Now, did that produce any angle on Temple yesterday for you? Were you of the crowd that was like, well, clearly something is amiss, so we must bet against Temple? Or were you of the crowd that was like, if Temple wants to stay out of jail, they're going to have themselves a game today? Which did you fall on, or did you just stay away entirely?
I did not bet it, but I would have sided on the second side of a lot of their power ranking is based in games where maybe they didn't try and they kind of have to in this one. Yeah. So I would have been on the side of the Owls.
Okay.
I heard that going around too yesterday. I don't get the first argument. Like, the second argument makes sense, right? Like, if you maybe got caught, then you're going to try a lot harder this game.
Who knows?
The first one, I don't get it all.
They end up beating UTSA, by the way, 84-82, and what turned out to be a pretty thrilling game. All right, Jim, let's start with the macro. Prisoner of the moment or not, this feels like, and certainly we went through our formula earlier, and by that it really convinces us of this, but I'm curious your thoughts. Feels like one of the more wide open tournaments in terms of figuring out an eventual champion than most you remember, if not all.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the odds sort of reflect that. Nobody shorter than 5-1. We were talking before we got on air. I remember Gonzaga was like +150 entering the tournament back in 2021. I think last year, Alabama and Houston had really ascended up the odds board. This year, yeah, I think the books are telling us they're not sure. And everybody analyzing, it's fairly uncertain too. UConn is probably the team that I feel most comfortable with in terms of, I can't pick a matchup that's really bad for them. But like, Houston's got some flaws. They've got injuries on the bench. Purdue still has a little bit of warts in terms of ball pressure and handling that. Braden Smith rolled an ankle but returned over the weekend, so something to monitor there for Purdue. And just kind of down the line, I think you can pick out some weaknesses with all the top teams, and it makes it, you know, exciting and potentially a bracket-burning type of March, because who knows what's going to happen. But yeah, I think it is super open at the top, and even the best team, UConn, isn't blowing people away all the time.
Give me one long shot that you could say, and I'm not saying, I'm not going to hold you to them winning at all, but that you could see, obviously we don't know the bracket yet, but has the goods to make a deeper run than most would expect.
Boy, it feels weird to say this, but Gonzaga, is that a long enough shot based on, I added them to my portfolio about a little over a week ago before they beat St. Mary's in San Francisco on the road. And they were 120-1 then. And now you can, I think, find there's been like 15 or 20 to get to the final four. It just feels like they're peaking at the right time. The tournament setting is okay for them because you've got days between games and they only have two guards. Like, Hickman and Nembhard are going to play all 40 minutes in every tournament game. But that lack of depth isn't as pointed in the tournament. You got all those long TV breaks. That certainly helps as well. And they've kind of shot up the seeding board too, the S curve. You know, they were like, are they a bubble team? And then they won those two games and their resume improved to the point that I think they're like a 6 or 7 seed right now. If they win the WCC tournament, they're in the ballpark for a 5, and their predictive measures have always been strong, the top 20 team in that department all year. So the fact that they're, you know, hitting their stride and actually an underdog and not the hunted one seed as they are in typical years, I think Gonzaga is actually a worthy pick in that department.
Yeah, and matter of fact, I asked Kai McKeon, your cohort over there at Three Man Weave, along with Matty Cox, but I asked him last week, give me the team that you have that you believe has the widest variance of outcomes coming up in the tournament, and he said Gonzaga, right? Like, he could see it an early exit, or he could see him going deep. I was just talking to Dave Check, who's doing a documentary on Gonzaga. They're obviously in the West Coast semis today, Gonzaga here at the Orleans, and he was talking about there was a moment this season, I want to say it was the San Diego State game where they lost, where like Mark Few was like, I don't even know if we're making the tournament this year. Like, there was definitely a nadir at one point, right, where it was like super low, and here they are being Gonzaga all over again. All right, let's do this chronologically. I want to talk about today's games, then we'll get into conference tournament odds. Today, 14 games, talked about it, West Coast conference semis, summit semis, Big Skies feeding the semis, Coastal semis, Southland second round, and of course a couple championships in the Southern and the Sun Belt. Do you like anything today?
I think my favorite bets are on a couple of dogs right in the same price range. Santa Clara against St. Mary's out there in Vegas. I think 10 is too many for them. They only lost by 5 at St. Mary's last time out. They've got a lot of size to compete with one of the best rebounding teams in the country. They actually won the glass battle in that game at St. Mary's. And the Gales just aren't quite the same team without Josh Jefferson. Their four-man that is out for the season with a knee injury gives them some athleticism and playmaking and shooting at that spot. Their replacements haven't been able to fill that void. So at Santa Clara, you know, they beat Gonzaga at home and then got shelled by St. Mary's the game after that. I think that was a bad spot, and I'm not going to blame them for that. I think getting double-digit points is too many. And adding the fact that Randy Bennett is not a great tournament coach against the spread, He's like a 40% guy against the spread historically in conference tournaments. I'm comfortable with taking the points there at Santa Clara, and I think they can compete and keep that one close. The other one I like is a tournament final, the SoCon. I think 10 is too many for East Tennessee State as well. You know, Samford has a ton of depth, which helps in this kind of back-to-back stuff. And I know East Tennessee State went to overtime yesterday, but these tournament games tend to slow down, especially in the title game. I don't think this gets up and down the way Samford typically likes it to. And they haven't been super convincing. You know, they had a nice second half yesterday against Furman, but that was against a team also off of overtime and wasn't the most convincing performance. So East Tennessee State's team's playing really, really well right now. They've got some size at guard and can somewhat handle the pressure of Samford. So, yeah, I think both those games, 10 is a little too many points for the underdog.
All right, Santa Clara getting 10 in the West Coast semi against St. Mary's today, and then in Nashville, North Carolina. East Tennessee State getting the same amount of points in the Southern Championship against Samford. Let's talk about the tournaments that the odds are out now for all these conference tournaments. Let's talk about the ones that begin tomorrow. I'll just throw out all the conferences. You tell me where you think there's a play. Talking ACC, A-10, Big 12, Conference USA, and the Metro Atlantic tomorrow. Which floats your boat here in terms of a bet?
I kind of like the A-10. Richmond going off around 5-1 in that league. They are the one seed and they start five seniors, two of whom are fifth year seniors. They play slow. It's execution based. I think that is pretty good for a tournament setting where they're not reliant on transition. The slowdown isn't going to affect them. They've got all kinds of experience. They lost their finale at George Mason, but they'd already clinched the one seed and didn't really have an at-large to play for. So I'm not too concerned about that performance. I think they've got pretty good value there. And then the Metro Atlantic, I typically am scared of this league. I don't bet it very well, but I love the draw for Fairfield. They're, to me, on the opposite side of the bracket of the three other best teams in the league. Rider, St. Mary's, and St. Peter's, and Quinnipiac are all in the top half, and Fairfield's on the bottom. They've got the best backcourt in the league. Goodine is the Syracuse transfer that can go off for 30 points in any game. And they recently got Alexis Yetna eligible, a 27-year-old front court player that's been at South Florida and Seton Hall, and he's sort of fortified the interior defense. So I bet them 3-1 in the Metro Atlantic Fairfield, just between having that best backcourt, having a really good draw. I think that sets up well for them to go along with that Richmond somewhere around 5-1 in the A-10.
All right. Plus 475 seeing on the Richmond Spiders in the A-10. How about on Wednesday? These tournaments start: the American, the Big East, the Big 10, Big West, MEAC, Mountain West, Pac-12, SEC, SWAC, and WAC. What do you like there?
All kinds of opportunities there. Yes. I think the American is the most wide open that you can find. Like, I don't love FAU's draw, and they're the highest on the odds board. I would not touch them. I think you'd go down the board and find somebody like a North Texas or UAB. I saw 24-1 at one book. I think that's a pretty worthy wager. I don't really trust SMU high up the board either. So if you want to go crazy, I think the American's a good spot for it. But I do like in the Big East, I actually think UConn's a decent bet because I am not optimistic about Kolick returning at full strength for Marquette. So I sort of trust UConn despite laying a big price there. And then, Pac-12. I like USC quite a bit. They just beat Arizona, and they have trended way, way up since Isaiah Collier returned, the potential top five pick there, big-time recruit. They've got a ton of size. Talent is there. I think that's a team that in a conference where only Arizona is completely, I guess Washington State also locked into the big dance, but there's not these like titans that they have to go through and they just beat the best team in the league. I think USC has got some decent value there just with how they're playing down the stretch with Collier back in the lineup.
Yeah, USC, when I checked it last night anyway, was 30-1 to win the Pac-12 tournament at DraftKings. By the way, UConn, not prohibitive, right? Not a prohibitive favorite in the Big East tournament, about minus 135. So it's not exactly, yep, a tough thing to lay, obviously, with about a three- or four-headed monster in that conference. Jim, appreciate it. What a week it's going to be. By the way, I failed to ask you about the MAC. Anything in the MAC on Thursday off the top of your head?
Ohio. I think the Akron, Toledo have got some flaws at the top of that league, and Ohio's the one that's playing the best down the stretch. So, yeah, Bobcat.
All right. Only thing left after that is the Ivy, which, of course, is a four-team tournament later in the week. Jim, enjoy, man. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Gil.
Jim Root, three-man weaver at 3MW underscore CBB for all of their plays. What a week it's going to be in college basketball. Still to come, Mike Somich on College Hoops as well. We're coming back. Tennis and golf updates on the other side. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.